Hey, you want that to go?
It's positively a line at the takeout window this morning in the takeaway studio. Always stories we want you to stay on top of in this segment. Femi Okeh is here, Ibrahim Abdelmateen with sports, and Louise Story, finance reporter for our partners, the New York Times, all in the studio.
Good morning.
Oh, it's a crowd. It's a crowd. It's crowdsourcing. So, Louise, let's begin with you. The demise of Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers, of course, caused a chain reaction in the financial sector. Mm-hmm. And among the consequences, of course, was the destruction of all kinds of jobs in the financial sector.
Yes.
All of a sudden, looking back, we learned that some of those executives did pretty well in the darkest days of Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns. First of all, what did we learn and what does it mean?
So we've been hearing for a long time about all the money that these executives lost because, you know, a lot of them own stock.
Sure.
And the CEO of both Lehman and the CEO of Bear Stearns each lost more than $900 million in paper value in their stock. So we've been hearing that. But what's new is today there's a study coming out from Harvard Law School that shows just how much they cashed out before these companies tumbled. And for the top five executives at Bear Stearns, it's $1.4 billion. For the top five executives at Lehman Brothers, it's more than $1 billion.
So company sinks, executives swim. And, I mean, certainly having $100 million in the bank, even if
right.
you used to be a billionaire, is probably okay.
It changes the equation. You know, they did have a lot of stock at risk at the end, but they had cashed out a lot. And when you're that wealthy and when you can cash out ahead, it does change the equation. Now, one thing in their defense is that some of these sales were for tax purposes. So when your stock vests, even if you hold some of it, you have to pay taxes on it. So some of these executives were paying some taxes with this. Nonetheless, they didn't lose their shirts here. They do have a substantial wealth. And this raises questions about, in the broader compensation debate, we've had some people saying, well, look, Lehman and Bear Stearns executives lost so much money in the stock, so that didn't work. But this study is pointing out that they also made quite a lot of money in the stock.
And the takeaway there is that as we talk about risk assessment,
yes.
a lot of these companies have within their books compensation arrangements
that could
are essentially
risk.
No risk,
right.
even if the company goes away.
They still make money.
Louise Story, thanks so much. Ibrahim Abdelmateen, the sports story this morning is it's looking a little bit like a Lance Armstrong situation in NASCAR. Jimmy Johnson, four-time champion of NASCAR.
So all he had to do yesterday was place 25th out of 30, but he took 5th. And with that, Jimmy Johnson chased himself into history. It was the NASCAR Sprint Cup. He would become the NASCAR Sprint Cup champion for a record-setting 4 years in a row. And you're right, you're perfectly right, that he joined the ranks of Lance Armstrong, who won the Tour de France for 7 years. Also, Pete Sampras won Wimbledon for 4 years in a row. The Celtics of the 60s won 11 championships out of 13 years. That's the kind of record that Jimmy Johnson made this week.
And NASCAR, of course, has huge audience numbers both on television and certainly in the arenas where NASCAR races are run.
And that's interesting. Compared to followers of NASCAR are familiar with names like Dale Earnhardt, Richard
right.
Petty.
Sure.
Those guys have both won 7 stock car championships. Neither of them have ever done what Jimmy Johnson did. And fans yesterday, all season long, were cheering against Jimmy, anyone but Jimmy. But at the end, they gave a standing ovation for Jimmy Johnson,
everybody.
Who doused himself in Gatorade instead of beer and champagne.
And everybody loves a winner, ultimately, there in NASCAR. You know, we had a discussion with Stephen Dubner of Super Freakonomics last week about issues in NASCAR race cars, that as they increase the number of safety components, it makes the drivers more reckless. And we also had a similar issue in the NFL, where if you wear a helmet in the NFL, it maybe encourages players to be a little more reckless, and thereby the number of injuries increases. We got this interesting response from one of our listeners. I want you to hear it, Ibrahim.
Hey, Celeste. Hey, John. This is Ethan in Brooklyn. I just wanted to say on this issue of concussions, I think it was the Malcolm Gladwell article in The New Yorker a couple of weeks ago that mentioned that, in fact, it's the problem of getting hit in the head a few hundred times in practice and in every game for 10 years and then 20 years that's the big deal. It's not really specifically one or two concussions. Now I'm going to go bang my head against the wall.
The listener makes a serious point. The whole career of being, maybe a lineman in the NFL is about getting your head bashed.
I would say, like, when people ask me about my playing career, which was short, but it was 13 years of hitting people every single day. That's what I describe it as. Every day my job was to hit people head on for 5 days a week. And that takes a toll on you. I've had you know, I won't say how many, but I've had more than five concussions myself.
Wow.
And I think that every football player has gone through a moment where they've been hit and they don't know where they were for a second.
And Ibrahim Abdelmateen, it's not a helmet issue. There's no helmet that will deal with that, getting hit in day in and day out.
It's true.
Last takeout comes from listeners who had some emotional thoughts about a tearful goodbye from Oprah Winfrey.
These years with you, our viewers, have enriched my life beyond all measure.
Yes, enriched in more ways than one. Oprah Winfrey announced the end of her show after 25 years, and we asked what you think of when you think of Oprah.
My most vivid image of Oprah is her ardent support for Barack Obama during the primary season. I think that she had a lot to do with winning over many white women.
Now that's Jay who called us, while Sarah emails, I don't feel good about her ability to judge and then make the world judge. For example, the James Fry situation. You have too much power if you can make the world turn against a person that they have never met.
And of course, the James Fry memoir about his response to a drug addiction that turned out to be a little more fiction than fact.
Yeah.
Yes. Cassie tells us her story. To me, Oprah is a call to action on behalf of others. A few years ago, I was recovering from surgery at home when I saw an episode of the show on the tragic lives of children living in Darfur. I knew I could do little to help the suffering children in Africa, but watching that program, I knew that I could help a child in my own state. A year later, my husband and I adopted two teenage brothers who'd been in foster care for 7 years.
And finally, over the weekend, the Twilight Saga New Moon rose to the top of the box office. We talked last Friday, you may remember, with the New York Times' reviewer A.O. Scott about the movie and the book series it's based on. And this weekend,
A.O. Scott didn't like the books too much, and a lot of our listeners called and said, hey, the books aren't literature, but they're great entertainment.
I have a number for you. 140.7 million in movie tickets over the weekend in North American theaters.
Take that, A.O. Scott. We'll see you on Friday, and that's your takeout.